Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's late March 1572 in the North Sea. Willem Vandermark, the Lord of Lumi, struggles to keep his balance as waves hurl his ship from side to side. All around him, sailors wrestle with sails and rigging as the wind howls. A 30-year-old Dutchman, Lumi leads a fleet of privateers known as the Sea Beggars, and for the last few years, he's hunted the North Sea for the ships of his hated enemy, the Spanish. But now it seems he's about to be sunk, not by his enemy, but by the weather. The ship shudders as another wave crashes against its hull. Lumi just manages to grab the rail as the deck lurches beneath him, but a nearby sailor, hauling in a loose sail, loses his footing on the wet deck. He crashes down hard on his shoulder. The sailor grimaces in pain as he eases himself upright, his arm hanging uselessly at his side. It's obviously broken. Lumi barks at the man to go below and then takes up the rope the sailor was holding. Lumi pulls with all his strength, but the wind fights back, the canvas sail snapping and cracking with each gust, nearly tearing the rope from his grasp. But Lumi tightens his grip, grits his teeth, and leans back with his full weight. One by one, other sailors join him, and together they drag the thrashing sail down and lash it fast. Soon, the ship isn't leaning quite so precariously, but the Sea Beggars aren't out of danger just yet. After a terrifying few hours, the storm finally blows over. And when it does, Willem de la Marck, the Lord of Lumi, takes stock. His losses are minimal, but his plan is shattered. His fleet is in no position to head for its intended destination in Germany. So instead, they will turn south. With the help of a little bit of good luck, they'll change the course of the struggling Dutch independence movement on April 1st, 1572. You're not a witch, you know that, but they don't. Accusations of witchcraft or demonic possession increase year after year, and dealing with a vengeful mob can seem overwhelming. But with Burke and Sampson at your side, you won't have to worry. Their team of legal experts is only a short horse ride away, and they're ready to defend you against all malicious claims of devilry and enchantment. Nathaniel Burke and Edmund Sampson have spent 20 years defending the wrongly accused across 3 counties. They know the courts, they know the clergy, and more importantly, they know how to talk to a bishop at 2 in the morning when things have taken a turn. They've successfully defended clients against charges including unlawful consorting, suspicious gardening, and owning too many cats. So don't delay. Contact Burke and Sampson today. No case too complex, no accused too unpopular. And remember, they're the only firm in the land with a no-dunking guarantee. If you're ever submerged in a pond by a horde of angry villagers, they'll give you your money back. Burke and Sampson, because you don't want to be the next on the pyre.
This episode is brought to you by Pour Osos Mead. Guys, I found a mead. And I know I say this about every drink. I know I do. But this one had me sitting in a field outside Antwerp just crying. Happy crying. I'm shirtless in a field. And I'm so happy right now. My buddy Pieter found me and he said, Bert, what happened to you? And I said, Pieter, sit down. What makes Pour Osos Mead different? It's wildflower honey, cold fermented in an oak barrel, finished with a hint of elderflower. It's clean, it's smooth. It will absolutely end your evening in the best way. I've tried every libation from here to Lisbon, and nothing comes close. Pour Osos Mead ships directly to your door. Most of Western Europe qualifies. The Ottoman Empire is a work in progress. Right now, new customers get their first flagon free with any order of 4 or more. And if you're literate, just send a letter to our factors in Antwerp using promo code MACHINE and they'll handle the rest. Please allow 4 to 6 moons for delivery. Pour Osos Mead. It's for the bears because bears like honey. And that is what mead is made from.
You know those days when you're feeling sluggish, bloated, maybe your humors are just a bit out of balance? Well, now there's an easier way to take care of it. Introducing HelloFresh. HelloFresh delivers premium medicinal leeches right to your door every month. No more trekking through muddy marshes or bargaining with suspicious apothecaries. Just open up your crate and enjoy the healing of professional-grade bloodletting from the comfort of your own home. Each HelloFresh box includes carefully selected, ethically harvested leeches, plus simple step-by-step instructions from Europe's finest barber surgeons. Whether you're treating headaches, melancholy, or hysteria, HelloFresh makes it easy to rebalance your humors. HelloFresh.
From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is April 1st, 1572, the accidental capture of Brila. It's October 25th, 1555, at the Palace of Brussels, 13 years before the Sea Beggar fleet is caught in a North Sea storm. 22-year-old Dutch nobleman William of Orange steps out from his place among the assembled lords and moves smoothly to the side of the Holy Roman Emperor, Charles V. Charles is 55 years old and not in good health. He's almost crippled with gout and every movement is agony, so William is ready to steady him if he falters. But despite the pain, Charles is determined to go through with this announcement. The most important Dutch nobles have been summoned to hear Charles's new radical plan. He's going to give away the Netherlands. This country has been ruled by the House of Habsburg for more than 70 years. The Habsburgs are the most powerful dynasty in Europe, their empire stretching from Austria to Spain and even including several colonies in the Americas. But the aging Charles V has decided that his realm is too vast for one man to control. So today, he's going to split it up. Charles rises unsteadily and grips William's shoulder. William waits for him to let go so he can return to his designated spot behind the throne. But Charles keeps his hand firmly where it is. William must remain in place as Charles begins his speech. His voice faltering and his eyes brimming with tears, he announces his intention to abdicate his rule over the Netherlands. But the country won't be free. Instead, Charles is handing it to his son, Philip II, who's already been crowned King of Spain. William of Orange already knew about Charles's announcement. As one of the most prominent advisors on the Dutch Council of State, he had been briefed in advance, but the plan still makes him uneasy. For the past 30 years, a new religious movement has seized Europe. The Protestant Reformation has been enthusiastically embraced in the Netherlands too, with most of the population converting to this new faith. And although the Habsburgs are Catholics, Charles V has governed pragmatically, granting the Dutch a degree of religious freedom. But William isn't sure that the more hardline Philip will follow his father's lead. William's fears are soon proven right. Almost as soon as Philip takes charge of the Netherlands, he orders a crackdown on Dutch Protestants. As a Catholic, William himself is safe from attack, but he opposes the persecution of his countrymen. And for years, he tries to use his influence on the Council of State to moderate the Spanish king's harshest policies. Still, there's nothing he can do when a new governor arrives in the Netherlands in the summer of 1567. The Duke of Alba has direct orders from Philip to crush all dissent, not just from Protestants, but also any Catholics who are thought to be disloyal to the Spanish crown. Soon, thousands are arrested, and even the nobility isn't safe. In September 1567, William and other prominent Dutch nobles are summoned to a meeting in Brussels, but William suspects the invitation is just a ruse and instead leaves for his estates in Germany, an area out of Alba's reach. News soon filters through that William was right to be skeptical. Alba has seized the other leading members of the Council of State and had them all executed. it's clear that Spain is purging the Netherlands of anyone who doesn't wholeheartedly back Madrid. And as one of the few Dutch nobles still free, William becomes a figurehead of resistance to the Spanish. He raises an army, but the Spanish are far too strong, and they annihilate the Dutch force at the Battle of Jemmingen. Even after this spectacular loss, though, William still has an ace up his sleeve. As a coastal nation, the Dutch are skilled seafarers, so if they cannot defeat Spain on land, they can bleed it at sea. William of Orange encourages Dutch privateers to harass and attack Spanish shipping, and before long, dozens of Dutch ships patrol the North Sea under the leadership of Willem van der Mark, the Lord of Lumey. After a Spanish advisor dismisses the Dutch freedom fighters as naught but beggars, Lumey adopts the name as a badge of honor. The sea beggars raid Spanish ships, taking plunder to finance the Dutch cause. And when they're not fighting, the sea beggars seek refuge in friendly ports, especially across the North Sea in England. But in March 1572, the English Queen Elizabeth I becomes worried that hosting the sea beggars will risk war with Spain, so she demands that the Dutch fleet leave. Seeking a new sanctuary, the sea beggars will set sail for Germany. But the North Sea can be a dangerous place. The fleet will be battered by a storm that will force the ships south toward the Dutch coast and change the history of the Netherlands forever.
It is the year of our Lord, 1572, and you are still walking around looking like that? No, unacceptable. A man is judged by his beard in this kingdom, the stiletto, the spade, the forked. These are not merely styles. They are statements. They are your reputation worn on your face in public every single day. And right now, your beard is judging you back. Henry's razors are made from the same dependable steel used by Henry VIII's own royal executioner. A blade with a proven record, gentlemen. A blade that knows its purpose. Sharp enough to sculpt the cleanest neckline. Precise enough to define an edge that says, this is a man who has his affairs in order. Henry's razors. Trusted by barbers, feared by courtiers. And available now from all good blacksmiths. New customers receive their first blade free with any order of four or more. Use code WIVES at your nearest licensed provider, and Henry's razors will throw in a complimentary leech. Don't lose your head. Use Henry's razors.
I'll be honest with you, friends. A few months ago, I was not feeling like myself. My energy was low, my joints ached. I had the sort of lingering headache that made things I usually enjoy, bargaining over wool prices, dowries, guild contracts, feel like chores. I know, right? Well, my physician tasted my urine and consulted his chart of stars and then gave me a very stern look. Uh-oh, I thought this could be serious. But that's when he recommended I try Mumia. Now, I'll admit, I didn't know what he was talking about. Mumia? What's that? But then he explained, it's ground-up mummy brought all the way from the tombs of Egypt, and it's been trusted by doctors for generations. Imbued with the intrinsic spirit of the dead, it's mixed with aloe and myrrh to heal, refresh, and rejuvenate. So, I had to give it a try. Just a small pinch mixed into my morning wine, that was it. I couldn't even taste the difference. But I'll tell you something, within days, I could feel the difference. I had my energy back, my aches eased, my spirits lifted, my humors had never felt more balanced. Now, I don't start the day without it, and I've never felt better. So if you're like me and this modern 16th century world is getting you down, try Mumia. Because trust me, just a pinch of the dead will make you feel a whole lot more alive.
This episode is brought to you by Father Cornelius Vandenberg, licensed confessor, Diocese of Bruges. Look, 1572 has been a lot. The Ottomans, the Dutch revolt, my goat situation. And I wasn't talking to anyone about any of it. I was just carrying it, all of it, alone. And it was really heavy, guys. It was really heavy. A friend told me about Father Cornelius, and honestly, it changed everything. The first session, I walked in there with 30 years of sin and walked out feeling like a new man. Here's how it works. You slide into a small wooden booth, you tell Father Cornelius all your problems, and he listens. Completely confidential. Well, I mean, he tells God, but God's not going to snitch, is he? Father Cornelius is trained to help with anxiety, guilt, mortal sin, the usual. And if he determines you need more support, he will match you with an exorcist for no additional charge. Right now, Father Cornelius is offering your first indulgence completely free. Just go to your local parish, mention code MACHINE, and begin your journey towards peace. Father Cornelius Vandenberg, release your load on A Man in a Box.
It's dawn on April 1st, 1572, in the Maas estuary in the Netherlands, 5 years after William of Orange escaped into exile. Willem Vandemark, the Lord of Lumi, stands at the rail of his flagship, his eyes straining against the dim light. The sails hang in tatters, and its hull has sprung several leaks. There's no way it can survive the open seas again without repairs. But Lumi's attention isn't on his battered vessel. He's watching the land for any signs of movement. 25 ships from the Sea Beggars fleet have sought sanctuary from the storm not far from the Dutch city of Breda. And although they are now safe from the weather, they face a new danger, Breda's garrison. For now, all seems quiet, but if the Spanish soldiers in the walled city spot the stranded fleet, the Sea Beggars could be trapped. And there's little doubt that King Philip's enforcer, the Duke of Alba, will have them dangling from a noose before the day is over. So turning away from the rail, Lumi orders his men to man the pumps, patch the sails, and replace the rigging. They must get moving as soon as possible. But before Lumi has finished delivering his instructions, a shout rises from the deck, and a sailor points toward shore. Lumi follows his gaze and spots a lone figure pushing a rowboat into the water. The boatman then jumps in and begins pulling the oars, heading straight for the flagship. Lumi eyes this newcomer suspiciously. It could be a Spanish spy, trying to gain valuable intelligence on the Dutch fleet, yet there's still no sign of activity on the city walls. So Lumi watches in silence as the boat slowly approaches. When it's near enough to be hailed, Lumi calls down and demands to know the boatman's business. The man answers in Dutch that he has urgent information for the commander of the fleet. He's unarmed and dressed like a civilian, so Lumi allows him to board. Once on deck, the boatman breathlessly delivers stunning news. A few days ago, the Spanish garrison received a message from the Duke of Alba requesting their help to quash an insurrection in the south. The soldiers immediately marched out of Breda, leaving just a skeleton crew behind to keep the peace. The city is almost completely undefended. Lumi immediately sees an opportunity. Seizing Spanish merchant ships may help finance the Dutch rebellion, but capturing an entire city would transform their struggle, giving the rebels a foothold on land as well as at sea. So Lumi sends the boatmen back with a message for the city council. In the name of Dutch solidarity, they must open the gates to the Sea Beggars. But hours pass with no reply. The boatman doesn't return, nor does any other messenger. This delay makes Lumi uneasy. The Sea Beggars' damaged ships are vulnerable, and Spanish reinforcements might already be on the way. So eager to seize the moment, Lumi orders the Sea Beggars to leave their ships at anchor. They march to Breda's north gate, and Lumi personally demands entry to the city. But again, he receives no response, and the gate remains closed. But on the other side of the city, the south gate opens. Fearing that Breda is about to be sacked, panicking citizens have overrun the handful of Spanish guards and forced the south gate open to flee into the countryside. When Lumi spots this chaos in the distance, he splits his force. Half of the Sea Beggars rush to the south gate before the Spanish guards can close it, and the other half pile wood against the north gate and set it alight. When the timbers have been weakened enough by the flames, the Sea Beggars use one of the ship's masts as an improvised battering ram to topple the doorway. With the Dutch freedom fighters flooding into the city from two directions, the few remaining Spanish guards surrender. Fearing for his life, the mayor pleads for mercy, saying that he didn't dare open the gates for fear of reprisals from the Spanish. But Lumi reassures the mayor that the Spanish won't trouble him anymore. Because now, the Sea Beggars are here, and they have no intention of leaving. The Spanish flag is torn down from the city hall, and the flag of William of Orange is raised in its place. Thanks to a seemingly random stroke of luck, Breda has become the first city seized by the Dutch resistance movement, but it will not be the last.
In London, in the year 1572, the plague had not been gone long.
You didn't question your physician. Not then. You were just grateful someone could help.
So when a new doctor arrived, claiming a fellowship from the Royal College of Physicians of London and a revolutionary new treatment.
He had patients lined up the street. Earls, merchants, clergy, everyone wanted him.
He said my husband's illness was not in his blood. He said it was something else. Tiny little things.
But his cure came at a price.
£4, sometimes more. And for what? Boiling water, washing one's hands, frightening people with tales of creatures too small for any eye to see.
I sold everything. I trusted him to save me husband.
And the men who should have known better.
I brought my concerns before the Royal College of Physicians of London. They agreed this heresy about invisible seeds of contagion, this obsession with the cleanliness of water and air, this dangerous notion that sickness travels between bodies like fire between houses. Something had to be done.
Made sure he was stopped. From the worshipful company of stationers, the makers of Spanish treachery, and the grocer's downfall comes a new season of Wicked Physician, Bad Seed. I'm Laura Beal. You can listen to the new season of Wicked Physician, Bad Seed, performed by a crier at Cheapside Market each Monday morning, or wherever you hear things read aloud.
Oh, me husband? He's fine. That doctor gave him some tea of willow bark and wormwood, and he's right as rain. Fine man, that doctor. Shame they burned him.
This episode is brought to you by the Spice Root. I'm going to be honest with you. Before the Spice Root, I was eating boiled turnips 4 or 5 nights a week. Was it keeping me alive? Sure. Was I living? I was not living. But here's how the Spice Root works. Every week, a curated selection of spices and ingredients sourced directly from Portuguese trading partners in the Moluccas arrives directly at your door, pre-portioned with a recipe card written in the vernacular. No market, no haggling, no scurvy. This week's box includes nutmeg, saffron, and a small but serious amount of cloves. Real cloves, guys. Not whatever your neighbor's passing off as cloves. I've tried those. Those aren't cloves. These are cloves. Takes 20 minutes to prepare, feeds a family of 4, and I promise you, the first time you properly season a dish in front of your wife, she's going to look at you differently. You're going to think you've done something wrong, but you haven't done anything wrong. You've just discovered the Spice Root. New subscribers get their first crate at half price. Just tell your harbor master you want the machine crate. He'll know what you mean. Spice Root. Life is short in 1572. Eat something good.
Look, I get it. We've all been there. Your half-brother's threatening your title again, or it's time to try and take back those lands you lost in last spring's fighting season. Or maybe you've accidentally captured a strategic port and need to defend it. But these aren't just headaches. They're real hiring challenges. So where do you go to find reliable, illiterate, and unquestioning cannon fodder? Don't just grab the first man you find on the street. Instead, use Surf Search. With Surf Search's new, easy-to-use listings, raising an army is simpler than ever. You can filter candidates by marching discipline, pike skill, or even loyalty to William of Orange. So the next time you need an archer, a gunner, or a suspiciously enthusiastic mercenary, with Surf Search, you'll find them faster than a Habsburg prince marries his cousin. That's Surf Search. Reliable. Recommended. Ready for service.
It's the early hours of April 5th, 1572 in Brila, 4 days after the city's sudden capture. Under cover of darkness, carpenter Raucus Muus crawls on his hands and knees away from the city walls. The land outside Brila is flat and exposed. A sharp screech cuts through the night, and Raucus freezes, his heart pounding. Soon he realizes it's just an owl, and he slowly exhales. He hasn't yet been spotted by the Spanish sentries in their camp, only a few hundred yards away. After Brila was captured by the sea beggars, the news spread quickly. The city's Spanish garrison was only a few days' march away, and it immediately turned around with orders to end the sea beggars' occupation. But Carpenter Raucus has an idea to stop the Spanish before their siege has even begun. Crawling through the mud, he makes his way to the main floodgate outside the city. For generations, Brila's farmers have reclaimed land from the sea. A system of dikes and sluices holds back the waters that would otherwise flood the fields where the Spanish are now setting up their camp. And when he reaches a wooden floodgate, Raucus rises into a crouch and grips the mechanism.
With a hard shove, he forces the floodgate open. Water surges through, and within moments, a torrent is spilling across the low-lying farmland, heading straight for the Spanish camp. His task complete, Rockus hurries back to the city before the alarm is raised. And by first light, the landscape around Brila is transformed. Inside the city, the inhabitants are warm and dry, but outside the city walls is another matter. The Spanish camp is completely waterlogged. Wagons sink to their axles, cannons disappear beneath the mud, and trapped horses whinny in fright until they're dragged free or shot where they lie. In no state to mount a siege, the Spanish withdraw. Brila remains in Dutch hands, and this victory has consequences far beyond its city walls. Within weeks, nearby Vlissingen also falls to the sea beggars. Then, several nearby cities rise up against their Spanish garrisons, declaring their support for William of Orange and the Dutch Rebellion. The road to independence will be a long one, though, and Spain will not recognize the Dutch Republic as an independent country for another 75 years. But the Dutch will never lose the first foothold they gained when a quirk of fate allowed the sea beggars to unexpectedly capture Brila on April 1, 1572. Next on History Daily, April 2nd, 1977. After a long and troubled recording process, Fleetwood Mac's iconic breakup album Rumours reaches number one on the Billboard charts. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Mohammed Shazi. Sound design by Molly Bach. Music by Thrum. This episode is written and researched by Scott Reeves, with additional material by Olivia Jordan, Owen Paul Nichols, and Jake Sampson. Edited by William Simpson. Managing producer, Emily Byrne. Executive producers are William Simpson for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.